I want to tell you a story about a guy named Frankie. That's not his real name, actually. He came from a pretty wealthy family and had one of those long, aristocratic-sounding names, but all of his friends called him Frankie. And he had a lot of friends. Frankie had this outgoing personality and an extremely charismatic spirit. He told great stories and even better jokes. He could sing all of the popular music of his day in a beautiful tenor. And as I said, he came from a pretty wealthy family, which meant he could throw awesome parties, which he did all the time. On a Friday or Saturday night, Frankie would get into his Bugatti Chiron and cruise around town, calling out invitations to everyone he met to come to the party. Well, almost everyone. There was a pretty large homeless population where Frankie lived, probably because of the encampment they had set up just outside of town. And Frankie couldn't stand the sight of them. He probably never really thought about it this way, but for him, they represented the complete opposite of everything he saw himself as. He couldn't even look at the ones standing on the median strip asking for help as he drove by. When the time came, Frankie volunteered to join the army and go off to fight. He expected to be as successful in this realm as he was in everything else. He had visions of honor and glory. But that's not the way things turned out. And he came home different. He was quieter, more serious. His parties weren't quite so much fun, and he threw them less often. He spent more time driving his Bugatti in the hills and the woods that surrounded the town rather than through the city streets. And he always seemed to be thinking deeply. He'd seen such horrible things in the war, experienced such horrible things, and he was having a hard time reconciling these with the privileged life he had led. He'd seen people who were so very unlike the friends he'd gathered together on Friday and Saturday nights, and he had seen people with problems and challenges he never could have even imagined. And as he thought about what he'd seen, he felt a growing need to do something about it, to do something about the unfairness he now saw everywhere he looked. What he thought most about was how far to take this new sense of urgency. He made sure that he always had bottled water in his car to hand out the window to people on the medians. And he began to take some of the money he used to spend on parties and give it to local charities. He volunteered a bit of his time to rebuild some of the dilapidated buildings around town, even using his own money to pay for the supplies. He started going to church, and not just on Christmas and Easter, but always the question echoing, how far should I take this? It had been a couple of months since Frankie had stopped driving his Bugatti around town and had begun walking or taking public transportation. It was better for the environment, and he could give his gas money to people who needed food. He was walking down the main street in town, and he saw a homeless person standing in the median. And this man was everything that Frankie had despised. His clothes were dirty. He was dirty. His hair was unkempt. His teeth were bad. And yet, on this day, Frankie found himself looking beneath or through all of that and seeing the human being within. And that person he was now looking at was what we all are when we're really seen. Beautiful. And without even thinking about it, Frankie walked up to this man who just a few years ago he wouldn't have even looked at and hugged him. And at that moment, he realized that he knew the answer to the question of how far to take things. He moved out of his house and moved into the encampment and lived there for years. How far to take it, this urge to do something, to do something to address the inequities we see all around us, to make the world a better place. How far should we go? How far should we take it? I know that this is a question I wrestle with a lot. Maybe some of you do too. After I change out all the halogen bulbs in the house for LEDs, which I'll admit I haven't finished doing yet, and I make sure that I diligently turn off the power strips when I'm not using those things that are plugged into them, which I don't, and I buy only sustainably raised foods and wear only organic cotton clothing, which I wash in non-toxic biodegradable soap, of course, and how far should I take it? How far can I take it? And honestly, how far do I want to take it? Do you ever wonder about things like this? Maybe you do only on a Sunday morning after you felt guilted from the pulpit about how many things need help in this world. Or after you've read a book on racism like Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, which if you haven't read it, you have to read it. Or maybe it's after you've listened to someone talk about income inequality. Or maybe you've woken up in the middle of the night and thought about your children or your grandchildren and wondered what kind of world are they going to inherit. And you wonder, shouldn't I be doing something more? Couldn't I be doing something more? And then there's that real question, how far should I go? How much sacrifice? How much am I willing to give up of my things, of the way I live? How much? After all, we are learning, we as individuals and we as a religious movement, that it's not enough to simply offer our help to those people who are in need. That's pretty easy, actually. But it really does nothing to address the underlying systems that perpetuate the problems we see around us and are feeling called to do something about. When we stay up here and reach down to help someone, no matter our intention, we reinforce those relative positions. So we know that we can't stay in our safe spaces and reach out our hands to give someone some assistance. And somebody needs assistance right now. And I see someone going to help. We know that we can't stay in our safe spaces and reach out our hands to give someone assistance without really being touched by their problems. We know that that's not enough. But what is enough? How far out of our comfort zones are we supposed to go? As I say to my kids all the time, I have good news and I have bad news. The bad news is that that story about Frankie, it's a true story. It's an updated telling of the story of a young man named Giovanni Di Pietro de Bernardone, who lived in the 12th century and early 13th century in Italy. It's the true story of a rich kid who had it all and then gave it all away to move from the center of society to its outermost margins, and to throw his lot with those who had almost nothing. That's the bad news. You might have to go that far. The good news is that today we know Giovanni by a different name, Saint Francis of Assisi. So the bad news is that the story tells us just how far people have been willing to go to answer that deep soul urging to make a difference. And the good news is that the guy was literally a saint. Both will be important to keep in mind through the rest of this sermon. Liberation theology, which is ostensibly our topic for the morning, and which Christine gave us an introduction to, is, as she said, a theological framework that appeared in modern Christianity in the Catholic Church of Latin America in the 1950s, although that name wasn't used until Gustavo Gutierrez's book, A Theology of Liberation, in 1971. The simplest summation of this theology is that the God of the Gospels and the early Christian church has a preference for those who are deemed insignificant, marginalized, unimportant, needy, despised, defenseless. Gutierrez called this a preferential option for the poor. Of course, liberation theologians would argue that this theological framework didn't begin in Latin America in the 1950s, but rather was well established in Palestine in the first century, and that it was really already established through the Hebrew prophets like Isaiah and Amos, Micah and Jeremiah, Ezekiel and Nehemiah, for whom the Nehemiah action is named. These theologies don't say that God's love is limited to the poor and the oppressed, just that God has a soft spot for those who have been marginalized and mistreated. Blessed are the poor, not because all people aren't blessed, but because the poor are so often treated as though they are not. And so they're being blessed needs to be highlighted. St. Francis wasn't part of the movement known as liberation theology, but he definitely saw that the place of the church was with the disenfranchised. The current pope, not coincidentally named after the earlier saint, has said as much today. "Poverty is the flesh of the poor Jesus," he said. "In that child who is hungry, in the one who is sick, in those unjust social structures." He also said, "A way has to be found to enable everyone to benefit from the fruits of the earth, and not simply to close the gap between the affluent and those who must be satisfied with the crumbs falling from the table. But above all, to satisfy the demands for justice, fairness, and respect for every human being." And good, socially justice-minded Unitarian Universalists that we are, we hear those kinds of words and say, "Yes, right." Yet if you're anything like me, while you're affirming that ideal, you're also asking yourself, how far do I have to take this? If I go down this road, how far will I need to go? Where will be the end of it? Will there be an end of it? I ask these questions, and you may too, because I know how insatiable the needs of the world are. And I am afraid. Afraid that if I set out on this path, it'll soon be one of those slippery slopes. And I sure don't want to end up at the bottom, on my bottom, all muddied and bruised and unable to get back up to where I began. Remember Giovanni di Pietro di Bernardone and hundreds, thousands of people like him prove that it is possible to go all the way, to so care for the poor and the oppressed as to become poor and oppressed oneself in solidarity. That is the answer he ultimately came to after wandering the hills of Assisi, wondering how far to go. All the way, no holding back. And if his and their testimony is to be believed, rather than some kind of regrettable burden, this going all the way opened the way for a joy that had been previously unimaginable to him. Giving up his wealth, he asserted, brought him riches beyond his wildest dreams. Remember, too, that young Francesco was a saint, and that we, again, if you're anything like me, are not. So how far should we go? How far can we go? And let's be honest, how far do we want to? And how far are we willing to go? I don't know. I don't know and can't say what the answer to that is for you. I don't even know what the answer is for myself. But I do know that I don't believe that the answer is for most of us, at least, as far as St. Francis went. And I know that for most of us, it's farther than I have gone so far. And I know that it's not going to be easy, that I'm going to take every step of that journey kicking and screaming all the way. But I also know that maybe, if we help one another, it'll be easier. Not easy, but easier. And maybe that's part of what it means to say that we, Unitarian Universalists, are a people of liberation. It means that none of us have to be about this work on our own. It means that we can walk this path with others, which, if you're anything like me, will be the only way we can walk this path. May it be so.